Last Sunday night, we looked at the hymn, O Thou Fount of Every Blessing. And as many of you pointed out to me, as we covered the words of that hymn, there's a term there, Ebenezer, that we discussed. And that it has its roots going back to the Old Testament, where a stone of remembrance was set up by Samuel after God granted them victory over the Philistines. And that the term Ebenezer literally means stone of help. And it was to be a memorial, a recognition that the Lord has helped us this far, and with His help, He will continue to be with us and watch over us all the way home. And as we talked about that hymn, it kind of helps us to kind of put into our mind when we sing it, when we sing that Ebenezer, we're not thinking about Ebenezer Scrooge, but rather this stone of remembrance. But you know what? As weird as it is, that comment that I made during that lesson actually gave me an idea for the sermon this morning. On December the 19th, 1843, Charles Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol. And in this story, there is a point at which Ebenezer Scrooge come face to face with his former companion and comrade in business, Jacob Marley. And there's a statement that Jacob Marley makes within this story, A Christmas Carol, that I'd like to talk a little bit about this morning. Again the specter raised a cry, and shook its chain, and wrung its shadowy hands. "You are fettered," said Scrooge, trembling. "Tell me why." "I wear the chain I forged in life," replied the ghost. "I made it link by link, and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you?" Scrooge trembled more and more. "Or would you know," pursued the ghost, "the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain." Ironically, this particular version, which is the original, the actual story of A Christmas Carol written by Charles Dickens, this is not the one that I'm particularly familiar with. I grew up with this one, with The Muppet Christmas Carol, one of my favorite movies growing up. It's funny, it's got some nice life lessons in it. And in particular, I wanted to mention, because they don't go word for word, according to Charles Dickens, but this is how, within the particular scene with Ebenezer Scrooge, and you have Jacob Marley and his brother Robert Marley in this version, "Were Marley and Marley, our hearts were painted black. We should have known our evil deeds would put us both in shackles. Captive bound, we're double ironed, exhausted by the weight. Your future is a horror story, written by your crime. Your chains are forged by what you say and do. So have your fun when life is done. A nightmare waits for you." Scrooge asks, "What are these terrible chains?" To which they reply, "Oh, the chains. We forged these chains in life by our acts of greed. You wear such a chain yourself." To which Scrooge replies, "Humbug, speak comfort to me, friends." The particular phrase of this chain that was forged link by link, or yard by yard, or as Jacob and Robert put it, the fact that your chains are forged by what you say and do. There is a great life lesson within that concept. Certainly not that spirits of the dead rise up and talk to us. That's not the lesson to learn here. But if they could, particularly people maybe who lived lives that we know were not in accordance with God's word, what might they say to those of us who are living? What message might they give to us? Well, there's a parable that Jesus told about the rich man and Lazarus. A lesson that Jesus gave to the Jews when he would talk about this rich man who behaved in a way that was sinful, greedy, didn't have care or love for his fellow man. As he was in torment, he asked Abraham that Lazarus be allowed to go back to warn his brothers so that they didn't make the same mistakes that the rich man had made. And of course, Abraham replied, if they will not listen to Moses and the prophets, they won't listen to someone who's risen from the dead. I think that anyone who might be in that state of torment, like the rich man, might wish the same thing that the rich man wished. That somehow, some way, a warning might be given to his loved ones to not make the same mistakes, to be aware of their choices in life. When we consider link by link, yard by yard, as Charles Dickens wrote it, I want you to imagine with me that each link of that chain is a choice, a decision. One decision here or there doesn't necessarily make a person's life. We're made up of the culmination of our choices, of our decisions. Seemingly small, insignificant decisions, day by day, can build habits. Choosing to brush your teeth every morning and every night, when you first wake up, when you're about to go to bed. According to what I've read, it takes 2 weeks straight for that to become a good habit. Sometimes for some people it takes longer. If you do something enough, repeatedly, on a schedule, it becomes a good thing. And that can have great consequences later. It can be a blessing. However, the same thought process works for bad habits, though. Something you do or don't do over a period of time can dictate your future in ways you can't imagine. So this morning, for a few minutes, I'd like for us to consider the importance of the choices that we make in this life and acknowledge that there are choices that have been made throughout the Bible that we have example given to us where it may have seemed just kind of not a big deal, not a huge issue, but became a big deal. For instance, in Genesis chapter 13 and in verse 10, when Abraham told Lot, go ahead and pick which way you want to go. You go this way, I'll go this way. So Lot, in verse 10, lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. That one decision, that one choice by Lot, forever dictated what was to come. Because after that, he exposed his wife and his children to the examples of Sodom and Gomorrah. Eventually, his wife, who, after being warned by the angels not to look back as judgment was impending for Sodom and Gomorrah, she did because she became attached to the place. And she became a pillar of salt. And then later in Genesis, and in chapter 19, verses 34 through 38, his daughters get him drunk, and they lay with him and ended up conceiving children that ultimately became thorns in the side of Israel over time. And you could trace it all the way back to his one decision here. Had he not picked that particular part to go and to stay because it looked so beautiful and it looked like it was a great place to live on the outside, the appearance of it looked great, had he chosen a different path, things might have worked out very differently. We can't always predict what's going to happen from the choices that we make. Seemingly small ones can lead to a bigger impact than we can imagine. Jacob and Esau in Genesis chapter 25 and in verse 29 for a bowl of porridge, bowl of soup, Esau sold his birthright. And that became a major issue because Esau's children also became major thorns in the side of Israel. All because he decided that he would rather have a bowl of soup than his birthright. David and Bathsheba is probably self-explanatory. One decision, one choice made hastily, made in the midst of temptation. He didn't think it through. He didn't consider the consequences. He made a mistake. And then he felt that he had to cover up that mistake by making more mistakes. Decisions that we make, especially bad ones, tend to snowball out of control. Because we feel like somehow we have to cover up the first mistake, and so we lie. Or we do other things to try to make it where it doesn't come out that I made the first mistake. Just a choice here, a choice there. A choice that may not be seemingly big at all, when we don't think it through and consider the consequences, can have dire effects on our life. Compare this to Moses in Hebrews chapter 11 and in verse 24. Hebrews chapter 11 and in verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the children of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. There are four actions, for all intents and purposes, that Moses did in these three verses. Moses refused. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to suffer affliction with the people of God. He esteemed the reproach of Christ as greater riches. He looked to the reward. This was his thinking through his decisions that he made. When he came of age, he chose not to be considered the grandson of Pharaoh and to enjoy all the benefits that would go with that title. But rather, he knew as a Hebrew, he knew who he was. And the Hebrew writer explains this, this is by faith. This is what Moses chose to do. He chose to act in faith. So as a result, we can see how quick, small, hasty decisions can often lead to big consequences. Whereas thoughtful, considered decisions, where Pharaoh, through faith, made the choice to side with God, to do God's will, rather than to enjoy, as the Hebrew writer writes, the passing pleasures of sin. In Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 26, Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 26, Solomon, speaking about wisdom, tells us the importance of applying that wisdom in the decisions that we make. God, through Solomon, speaks in verse 26, "The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray." Something so small as to who you call your friend. Sometimes we call certain people friends because it's polite. But there are certain individuals we truly consider friends. And the way that we should define that circle of friends, these are people that we allow so close to us as to influence us. These are relationships we value, people that we value. And because of that closeness, we can either work together as an influence of good for each other, or that individual can be an influence of bad. Paul would write in 1 Corinthians 15 and in verse 33, in a context of false teaching, that evil communication corrupts good morals. Which is to say, the people that you allow to influence you, if you're not aware of yourself and you're not careful, they can influence you for bad. They can cause you to forget your faith. They can cause you to forget that you're supposed to be living like a Christian every hour of every day. One small moment of indecision that your peers are trying to get you to do something you know you shouldn't do. And you make a choice. Rather than suffering ridicule from your friends, you decide to go along with them. That one decision could potentially have life-altering consequences. A lot of times, I think sometimes people think that's cliche. But you know what? There are so many examples in our world of one bad choice. When we're young, perhaps. One bad decision to go along with my friends, and something happens. Somebody dies. Something illegal takes place. And for the rest of that person's life, their life is kind of culminates from that one decision. In Deuteronomy chapter 30 and in verse 19, Moses speaking to the children of Israel, and God through Moses speaking to us, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey His voice, that you may cling to Him, for He is your life and the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give them. I love how Moses, how he offers God through Moses, offered, here's the consequence if you obey. Here's the blessings that come from it. Here's the consequence if you disobey, the judgment, the condemnation that will come from it. I have set before you not only the decision of choosing life or death, or choosing to obey me or disobey me, I've set before you your future. You can see, and as we know, what God says is true. God says, if you choose this, here's what's going to happen. So you and I, day to day, with the little decisions, we don't really have that opportunity to really think about, okay, so if I choose this over this, what will the end result be? I read something that a recent study said that the average adult makes 35,000 decisions a day. Think about that for a minute. 35,000 decisions a day. Some of these are, do I want a toffee nut latte or do I just want my coffee black? Some of these are when do I take my break? Do I take it in 10 minutes or 15 minutes? Some of these are not decisions hardly at all, almost. But many of them, the decisions that we make in the midst of other people, of the type of example that we set, these are the types of decisions that really ultimately form the basis upon which God was offering these choices of life and death. If you obey me, here's what's going to happen. That's why in verse 19, Moses says, therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey His voice, that you may cling to Him, for He is your life and the length of your days. Joshua in Joshua 24 and in verse 15 encourages Israel to make a decision, to make a choice. In the midst of the history of Israel, who at different times worshipped Baal and the female version of Baal, Ashtoreth, and at times even worshipped Jehovah and Baal simultaneously. In verse 15, Joshua says, if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. At some point, a decision has to be made. In 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah put a decision before Israel to make a choice. Choose this day whom you're going to serve. If Baal is God, serve him. But if Jehovah is God, serve him. But how long will you stay between two opinions? How long are you going to try to straddle the fence? It was important for Israel to make a choice. They didn't, if you'll recall. They stayed silent. To which Elijah basically said, fine, then we'll let the true God decide who is real. You won't make a decision, you won't make a choice, you will stay silent, then God will speak. In Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 28, the opposite of having wisdom, the opposite of making godly choices, is those who make choices that aren't according to God's word. Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 28, as wisdom is speaking, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have none of my counsel. They despised my every rebuke. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be filled to the full with their own fancies. There's a phrase that we use sometimes, which is kind of the same thing that Solomon says in verse 31. You've made your bed, now you have to sleep in it. You have put yourself in this position because you ignored guidance, you ignored counsel, you ignored wisdom. Now you're going to have to deal with it. That's what verse 31, Solomon says. They shall eat the fruit of their own way. And it's not going to be pleasant. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. Isaiah chapter 65 and in verse 11, with regard to Israel, God says to Israel, you are those who forsake the Lord, who forget my holy mountain, who prepare a table for Gad, and who furnish a drink offering for Minai. Therefore I will number you for the sword. You shall all bow down to the slaughter, because when I called, you did not answer. When I spoke, you did not hear, but did evil before my eyes, and you chose that in which I do not delight. Notice God's condemnation of his people when he says, all of this is going to happen. My judgment's coming upon you because when I called, you didn't answer. When I spoke, you didn't listen. And you chose that in which I do not delight. Compare that to Psalm 119, verse 30. When the psalmist says, I have chosen the way of truth. Your judgments I have laid before me. I cling to your testimonies, O Lord. Do not put me to shame. I will run the course of your commandments, for you shall enlarge my heart. Teach me, O Lord, the way of your statutes, and I shall keep it to the end. Give me understanding, and I shall keep your law. Indeed, I shall observe it with my whole heart. Make me walk in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it. God's condemnation to his people in Isaiah was, you did that which I do not delight in. Whereas the heart of our psalmist puts the commandments of the Lord, he says, this is what I delight in. I delight in your word. I choose the way of truth. I choose your way, God. W. Clement Stone once said, "You always do what you want to do." This is true with every act. You may say that you had to do something or that you were forced to, but actually, whatever you do by choice. Only you have the power to choose for yourself. Over and over again lately, and maybe it's just because I hadn't really thought about it before, but I've noticed how often in TV shows and in movies, the phrase comes up, "I had no choice," or "I have no choice," or "you had no choice." Usually, it's to excuse some course of action that was wrong. I had no choice. But in actuality, what they are saying is, I had no choice if I didn't want my deeds to be discovered. This was my only recourse to preserve my anonymity or to preserve my ability to not go to jail or whatever. I had no choice. That's not true. And the more I hear it, the more I'm aware of how often it's said in our media, and it's really starting to kind of get on my nerves a little bit. I had no choice. Because that seems to be an excuse that people use more and more to preserve my way of life, to preserve my status in my community, preserve my lifestyle. I had no choice but to. We always have a choice. We have a choice between right and wrong. We have a choice between easy or hard. And unfortunately, the easy choice is not the right one. Most often. Most often, the hard choice is the right choice. And it's that way for a reason. Satan has designed it that way. He wants to put us in a position where we think, this is my best avenue, this is my best way. God will understand because, God, I had no choice. David, why did you have Uriah the Hittite killed? Because I had no choice. Yes, he did. He had a choice. He chose poorly. My dad, at me and Elizabeth's wedding, towards the end of his wedding lesson or whatever, he quoted Indiana Jones. And he used that line. And he looked right at me. Of course, Dad, he's famous for using movie quotes. But what he said was, and he looked right at me, he said, "You have chosen wisely." Well, we have a choice today. We can choose poorly, or we can choose wisely. What kind of choice will you make today? Will you serve God? Will you put God first? Will you delight in His Word? What choice will you make tomorrow? What choices will you make throughout the week? Out of the 35,000 choices you make every day, there is going to be a percentage of those choices that are actually going to have consequences. And those consequences can be far-reaching and long-term, or they can be small, immediate effect type of decisions and choices. But they can either be an influence for good on others, they can be an influence for bad. They can serve to bring us closer to our God, or they can serve to distance us from our God. Choose wisely this morning to be baptized ever since washed away, to be added to the body of Christ, to become a new creature, and then to set forward each day to make the choices God wants you to make. For those of us who are Christians, sometimes because we make so many choices each day, it's just one of those things we just kind of go with the flow. And a lot of times we follow our instincts. And if our instincts are trained properly, that's probably all right. But you know what? There are some whose consciences have been seared with a hot iron. Our instincts, our conscience has to be trained properly for us to count on it, for it to become second nature. And in many ways, I'm sure there's something in all of us, in our lives, that we really struggle with, that isn't second nature just to think past. we have to be prepared to make those decisions in the heat of the moment and to choose wisely. In Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Will you act in the name of the Lord today? The invitation is extended. If you're subject, please come forward as we stand and sing.